And tonight's speaker has a service resume that makes me want to cry with anxiety a little bit. And it is very admirable, and you're just an absolute light, and I'm very excited for Sebastian to speak tonight.
Hello. Thank you for having me. My name is Sebastian, and I'm an alcoholic. I started drinking at a young age of 10. I grew up in a bad environment. Not the best place to really like have a chance of living what most people, or I guess some people would call a normal life, or just really the chances of me being the person I am today were very slim. I was in addiction for 20 years, and in that 20 years, I gave up a lot of the parts of myself that, well, I guess I didn't really give them up because I never gave them a chance to grow. I never gave myself the opportunity to fully develop in, I guess, the manner that was just entirely happy. And honestly, I never had the environment for that. From the time that I was 10 until the time that I was 30, I drank. I drank a lot. I drank to escape my past. I drank to escape my present. And I drank to not have to think about the future. That was the 20 years of my life in addiction. I experienced a lot of stuff that generally, I guess it's common, but it's also not common. I grew up in a household that was abusive. I've always been a person that, even at that time, I wasn't sure of my sexuality or the person that I was going to grow into, that it was noticeable. It was noticeable by my family and other people, and it was something that I immediately became joked about for, harassed about for, and it also put me in a position to be targeted at a young age for sexual abuse. These are things that weighed on me a lot, especially getting into my teenage years and into mild adulthood and then adulthood. And there are always things that weighed on me. There are always things that, I guess you could say, set me back. And in a large portion of that, I thought that that's all that I deserved. And I accepted that for the majority of my life. Even though I always claimed that, oh, I was being myself and I was being free and this is what I wanted and this is how I want to live my life. Looking back on everything now, where I'm at, I see that a lot of that was just me trying to fit in, me trying to make other people happy, me trying to just fit the mold, to be normal, to fit in. And honestly, I was never supposed to fit into those areas. I was never supposed to be the person that I was trying to be. And that's why it was so unnatural for me, and that's why my only escape was alcohol. And in my later areas of addiction, other things. And my life was truly just miserable. I did not care about myself. I didn't care about other people. And I didn't care to really preserve myself for the next day. And I took that out on myself a lot. At an early age, I learned that I could trade myself for the things that I needed, because there were predatorial people in my life that made that possible. And of course, at that age of my life, I had already been through what I had been through, and I was kind of numb to everything. And so getting into that part of my life, it didn't really faze me at that point, because it was just, I need this, I want this, and all I have to do is this thing. As I got older, looking back into that, I started to see like how that was wrong and the people that were doing that were not right people, and how I had been like putting I had put myself in a situation, but also I had been placed there naturally just from where I was born. And so I continued to try to have a normal life. I continued to try and fit in, and I continued to try and be something that I wasn't. I never really knew what like true compassion was. I was never taught how to build an environment of love or just like care for people or be cared for. And that's something that over the past 4 years, I've definitely been able to achieve. Something that I thought was impossible, something that people told me were impossible, and honestly, where I'm at now, there are so many obstacles that I've made it past that either I told myself I couldn't do it, somebody else told me that I couldn't do it, and I just believed it. And those things were not true. I just wasn't ready for the things that I have today. Mentally, spiritually, and I guess physically. But today I have so many great things, and that comes from I reached a point in my life where all of my desperate acts of selling myself and ending up in situations that were bad for me, and finally all of that stuff caught up to me, and I landed myself in jail. This is where my journey of sobriety began. December the 3rd of 2021, I was arrested and taken to Gwinnett County Jail. I didn't realize how long I was going to be there. I was there for a year and a half, and it was terrible. It was extremely terrible. And it was honestly the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because whereas some people are able to walk into this room and somehow achieve getting sobriety, that's not how my story happened. So I didn't know anything about a 12-step program. I didn't know anything about AA or NA or any of these things. They were all foreign ideas to me. I knew what addiction was. I knew what an alcoholic was. And I knew how to be one, even though most of the time I denied that I was. But I was. Indefinitely, will always be an alcoholic, but today I just get to be a recovered one. I went into that jail and immediately started looking for options. Like, what can I do to make myself look good? At that point in time, it was just me being desperate, trying to claw myself out of what I had gotten myself into. And I ended up getting a piece of paper, checking off a bunch of boxes, and from that point, I ended up in AA, I ended up in NA, and I ended up taking a drug relapse prevention class in Gwinnett County Jail. There was something about those AA meetings that really just hit home for me. And it took a while. It took me 6 months before I could even think about the fact that maybe I could get out of here and live a normal life, and maybe I could have just a tiny piece of what these people that I saw in that Zoom meeting had. You know, because a lot of the stuff that they were saying was stuff that I've done, I've been through. I've definitely felt that way, and that's why I drank. I started to get a glimpse of inspiration that I could possibly, if I tried. So within that year and a half of being in jail, of course, me getting arrested, I lost everything. I got arrested for fraud, so I lost my identification. I didn't have an ID. I didn't have a Social Security card. I didn't have any of the things that you would need to like get out of jail and be successful with. Because most places that you get into, like sober livings and all of that, they generally require an ID at the least. And I didn't even have the ability to get one of those. So I lost both of my parents while I was in jail as well. So about 6 months in, I lost my dad to an overdose. And then about 3 months before I was released, I lost my mom. So whenever I got out of jail, I literally had nothing. I had brand new, clean slate. That's how my brain had to look at things. I had nobody else that I could lean on for help or support, and I was just out here in the world. I was out here by myself, and I had nothing, and I had no idea. I had no idea what I was going to do. And at this point in my sobriety, I didn't know how strong of a presence my God was there for me. I got out of jail. So while I was in jail going to the AA meetings, there were four men, which I've had the privilege of meeting. And in real life, I've been at where they have told their stories, and I've just been able to know those people. But in that moment, those people were something I latched to. Just the idea of, well, these people can do it. Because it was the only representation that I knew, that I saw. But I wanted that. I wanted to not have to wake up and just be miserable or hate myself or any of those things. Waking up in jail for the first time and going through a year and a half of experiencing emotions with no way to escape at all was terrible. But I had to do it. I had no choice. I had no options. Getting to the point where I was released, there was someone, I wasn't sure whenever I was going to be getting released. Like, honestly, they gave me no information. I ended up going to court, surprisingly, finally, after a year and a half, and the very next day I was out of jail. One of the people that was there told me about a place called Serenity House. And at this point in time, I had no idea what a Serenity House was. I thought that maybe it was somewhere that I could go and they would give me a bed and feed me, but it got me there. So I got out of jail and I got released with somebody. And we ended up walking to the Kroger right down the street, and he went inside and stole some alcohol, and he offered me some, and I was like, well, I don't really think that's a good idea. At that point, I was given 10 years of probation, and I've successfully gotten past most of that, but, you know, I didn't want to go back to jail. I didn't want to be in that situation anymore. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that I had to take the small opportunities that I saw present that day. And that day, what was present for me was to get myself to Serenity House. So from that Kroger, he ended up, his wife picked us up, and they dropped me off at Serenity House. And context on the way that I arrived to jail and the way that I arrived to Serenity House. I was very skinny. I was very malnutritioned because instead of providing myself the things that I needed, I would rather have gotten other things. And I weighed roughly 170 pounds. And if you want to see a picture of that afterwards, just come see me. I will gladly show you. That year and a half, I ended up working in the kitchen, and I gained a lot of weight. Like, I'm telling you, I went in 170, and I came out 3+. Because that's the only thing that I had to escape. The only thing that I could do to escape was just eating myself to a miserable state of mind and just sleeping. And that's what I did. And I did that very well. And so whenever I got out of jail, highlighting the fact that I had lost everything, so when I got out of jail, the only thing that I had was what I had on my back whenever I walked into Gwinnett County Jail weighing 170 pounds. So needless to say, those clothes did not fit, but I did squeeze myself into them somehow. And I walked down the street with the pants that I had were so tight that I couldn't pull them up past my butt crack. I had to fold them in. The shirt that I was wearing, luckily, was stretchy, and at the point that I was wearing it when I got arrested, it did go all the way down, but at the current state of my weight, it did not go past my belly button, so I looked a hot mess, straight up like a busted can of biscuits, and that's how I felt. Regardless of any of that, I knew that I had to walk into this place, and I knew I had to ask for help. And I did. And what I was greeted by was something that I will always cherish. And this is probably where I'm going to get a little teary, because it's a very highlighted moment in my life, because this is where everything really changed for me. I was greeted with happiness, and people weren't looking at me like I was crazy. They were looking at me like they needed to help me. And this was a strange scenario for me, because any time that anyone's ever offered me help in my life, it was always with something that was desired from me in return. And I was scared. I was terrified. I may not have shown that on my face, but I was. I was greeted, and this is where God showed up for me in so many ways. I was there at Serenity House for about 3 hours, and from the time that I was there, you know, it wasn't everything that I wanted, but it absolutely was everything I needed. Somebody gave me a hammock that I absolutely did not put up, because I did not know how, and it was dark. And I love this guy to this day. He's a very close friend of mine, and I've even like made a comment on that. But they did tell me that they weren't allowed to tell me that I could sleep in the woods, but also they wouldn't stop me. So I proceeded to live in those woods for about 2.5 months until I was able to get my ID and my Social Security card, which was provided to me through help from those same people. The hand of AA, I had nothing, I had no idea what it was, but it was there. And like I said, I'll always look back on that moment and cherish every second of it, even though I was terrified. And I was scared, and I was vulnerable. Within that 2.5 months, someone thankfully bought me some clothes. People would take me to their house for small periods of time so that I could shower and eat like a normal meal and, you know, sleep in a bed or just inside of a dwelling. Like I said, not everything I wanted, but it was everything that I needed in that moment. And people would let me go to their house and wash my clothes, and people, strangely enough, gave me money for food, and I spent it on food. And in this same period of time, I was living back in the woods at Serenity House, there was also other people living back there, and they were doing other things. I had plenty of opportunity to go back to things that I knew, things that I would generally have used to escape from the reality of what I was going through in those moments. But thankfully, I didn't. I ended up getting approached by somebody, and he became my sponsor. I ended up getting into a program, and I lived there for a year, and I graduated that program. I stayed sober, and I'm still sober. And so my journey went from that terrified, miserable, lonely person that got arrested shortly after Thanksgiving in 2021 to that still vulnerable and terrified extra large person that that I became, and then everything settled out. I found a way to be happy that I didn't think was possible. I was greeted and I was gifted. I was gifted with so many great people in my life today. People that they're there for me when I need them, and I'm there for them when they need me, and we support each other. Like, true friendship, something that I thought prior to getting sober was a myth. Like, oh, that's fake. That is fake. That does not exist. This is not something that people just do. People are not genuine. But they are. They can be. And strangely enough, I became one of those people. I became the myth that I thought was impossible. I never thought that I would be able to escape my addiction. I didn't even know that there were people who just didn't drink or didn't do something, or that I knew that I had the ability to do it a lot better than most of the people that were around me. I knew that. And it took me a long time to realize that I had a problem. The first time that I really realized that I had a problem was around the age of 25. I remember I had a very, very wild night that involved me getting naked and driving home butt naked in a Miata with a cat that I had stole from somebody and a bottle of Bacardi on 85 from Gastonia to Charlotte, top down in a Miata. So they're painting a very vivid picture for you. So I made it home, thankfully, somehow. And the cat lived a very happy life. I forget that whenever I tell this, that people will approach me afterwards and be like, "But what happened to the cat?" I named him Niklaus. I took him to the vet and I loved that cat for as long as I could. And the very next day, I felt defeated. And this is the first time that things really clicked for me. I poured a drink and my emotions were up and I threw the drink and it shattered and splattered and all of the things. The realization of how much of a problem I had was 15 seconds later I poured another one and slid down the refrigerator drinking it while I was crying. Because I was trapped, and I knew that I was trapped, and I didn't think that there was ever going to be an escape, and I didn't know how I was going to live the rest of my life that way, but there also wasn't a strong enough desire for me to quit that. And so I continued to do those things. And now, jumping back into my sobriety, it was possible. It wasn't possible for me in that moment, but it was definitely possible. And I thank God every day that I was given the opportunity to live such a cherished life. Like, I could die today and just be fully content and happy with the life that I have. 30 years of misery followed by addiction and not having any kind of happiness that was solid or stayed is nothing compared to the past 4 years that I've had. I'm in such a great place today. I didn't go from being a felon. I'm still a felon. I'm still on probation, but somehow I have a career today. Like, I have a really good job. I went from just being a regular floor associate to being someone that is trusted, and I've moved up from that to being leadership where I work. I've been leadership in that building for almost 2 years. I have built a very good name for myself, and I'm very close to the promotion that I'm working for to become a supervisor. And these are things that were not possible for me before. Even then, like, I thought that getting out of jail and getting a job, like, I would be stuck with just the low cut of work, and I would never be able to move up because of my past and what the label that had been stamped on me, that what it took for me to get sober. It took me losing everything. It took me running until there was no room left to run, and even when there was no room left to run, I still jumped off that cliff. Thankfully, there was the hand of God and the hand of AA to catch me from splattering when I hit the ground, because some say I hit the ground, but I still think that I hit the ground running. I might not have been running fast at first, but I am now. What has come from being in this program and living a life of sobriety and being able to deal with my emotions and find a way to love myself, I did not know that it was possible to have so much self-love. I didn't know that it was possible for me to just honestly be happy with me and to not, like, I don't need love from other people today. I don't need recognition. Those things are great, and they make me love myself more, but I don't necessarily need those things like I did before. I'm not desperate for attention because I've created an environment for myself where, yes, I get attention from other people and I have great friendships, but none of those things can compete with the fact that I enjoy being who I am today. I'm not a shit person anymore. When I first got in here and I was working in the steps with my sponsor, my first sponsor, he was telling me, he literally had to tell me, he was like, Sebastian, you're not as bad of a person that you're painting yourself out to be. He had to point out, like, me, just like my funny, caring, laughing self, parts of me that I was hiding from everyone else. I was reserving. I was holding back. But, you know, you can't hold your true nature in entirely forever. And there were small spurts of that where it would release and it would come out and it would be seen. And he told me to be that person more. And I have. I've actually learned how to be that person so good that it's just a very natural thing. I wouldn't know how to accidentally be the person that I used to be as far as the uncomfort that I was in and the hatred that I had for myself and for the people around me and the misunderstanding of just why me? Why can't I have these things? What is the problem with me? Why was I handed such a crappy card whenever I was born? The light at the end of the tunnel, it was very bright. And I don't think that I have to worry about it going out anytime soon. Getting into my recovery. At first, whenever my sponsor told me to get involved with service work, I was like, oh, I don't really know. I don't know how I'll fit into all of that. It doesn't really look very fun. I was like, it doesn't really look very fun. And boy, was I wrong. I guess not all of the service positions are fun, but the ones that I found myself in are. I get the pleasure of being the events chair for Gikipa. And if you haven't heard that before, I don't know where you've been. Gikipa, Georgia's Conference of Young People in AA. And we've been working so hard for our conference next month, and I'm really excited about that. The fellowship that I've gained just from that is so amazing. There's so many people, not just young people. There are people, because not all of us are young, and some of us are young, and some of us aren't as young, you know? but it's been such a great environment. It's been such a great environment to just, like, to have fun in AA. I mean, I go to meetings and I go to meetings and it's a meeting. I go to a young people's meeting or I go to a young people's conference and it's an entirely different environment. There's so many young people fired up about sobriety and I cherish the fact that I get to be a part of that. And if you guys want just a glimpse of that, I swear, just come to Gikipa. Like, that place, I didn't realize that I could have so much fun or that I could be so happy until I got involved in that level of service. And that has pushed me into being able to be present in different areas of sobriety. Because before, I would have never volunteered to be the entertainment chair for prepaid. I wouldn't be a GSR for... the group that me and two of my close friends started in Buford, the Queer Ideas of Fun, which is, it's a gay meeting, and there's not one of those in that area, nowhere. The closest one is in Atlanta and Athens. And so we're doing what we can to start that up, and it's been fun just to be able to try and bring that there. I've learned in my sobriety that nothing is really truly impossible. It's more or less, it's like, how hard do you really want to work for it? How bad do you want it? Because if you want it, which is something that I never understood, and I tell my sponsees this all the time, well, if you don't want this, you're not going to get it. It's not something that you can just have. It's not something that you can just go pick up and it's yours. Because I work very hard every day for my sobriety. Not only that, I work every day to make sure that I can foster not just an environment around myself, but a personality that's approachable to people whenever they first come into the rooms, and be able to work with people there. So when I came into the rooms, was in Buford, in an environment that was mainly straight men and women, and it wasn't somewhere where that I was entirely comfortable. And I'm glad that I get to create a space around that, even if it's just around me or my friend group when we're there, but it's there. And if you're meant to find it, you will. Show up to enough meetings and I know you'll see me there. I had this idea that I wanted someone like me to be my sponsor. That's not what I got. I did get somebody who was very understanding and very compassionate, and he's a very close friend of mine today, and strangely enough, his wife is now my sponsor. That's just the way that things worked out. I claim that I have two sponsors now, because, I mean, they're in the same house. And there are two people that I really have come to cherish, because they've been there with me every step of the way. There are so many people in my life today that a lot of them have been there with me from the day that I walked through that door, a lonely, scared person. Not only were they there to uplift me that day, they've been there for me every day since. From that, I've learned how to love people. I've learned how to be compassionate, which were things that I struggled with. I really did, because I didn't have any good examples of that growing up. And I definitely wasn't looking for good examples of that in my addiction. Finding a way to get past everything that I had grown up with, especially the stuff focused around the word God, because I grew up in a Christian family. I have been sent to group homes. I have been sent to conversion therapy places. I have been through so much stuff with that. And that's where the idea that I had to be something else, I had to be somebody else, always stemmed from. I cherish the fact that I don't have to... So, funny story. My name is Timothy, and I had always been called Kevin because that's my middle name. I was always called Kevin. By the time that I was 18, I didn't want to be that person anymore. I was looking for an escape so bad that I changed my name to Sebastian, and that's what I've gone by for almost the past decade. In my mind, and honestly, I suffer from DID, which is dissociative identity disorder, which is something that happens to somebody whenever they have really bad PTSD. But in this part of my life, I don't have to dissociate from myself anymore. I don't have to dissociate to get things done, because I used to have to become different personalities to get through certain situations in life. And I don't have to do that anymore. My brain doesn't do that anymore. To not just be able to love myself and to be a whole person, I can be who I am and not have to worry about, oh, well, if I get in a situation that involves this, then I'm going to become this personality. I'm going to switch into someone else. And I don't have to live with that fear anymore either. I don't know, I never feel like I do say it enough, is that what this program has given me is true happiness, true friendship, true fellowship. I could never pay back the universe or the God that has given me the guidance and the ability to be the person I am today back for what I have today. But I try. I do that by being present, by building bonds with people, even though I'm terrible at remembering people's names. It took me like 10 times of meeting Bobby to remember his name, because my brain still is, oh, it's Robert. Robbie. But I get the ability to just be a person today. That's something that I never thought that I would have. When I look at myself in the mirror today, I don't have to worry about what I'm going to see whenever I make eye contact with myself anymore. I don't have to worry about going out in the world and being worried about how I'm going to get through the day. how I'm going to provide for myself. None of those things, which used to be an everyday struggle for me, are something I don't have to worry about those things anymore. The spirituality that I've gained from this program has evolved so much over the past 4 years. I went from being that desperate person in jail who was begging for an escape, who was begging for change, to the person who was given the opportunity to change and had to endure the moment that I was in, the moment that I had to get through to change. And then I got to this beautiful part where I had a foundation and I got to start building things on it, which is something that I would have never had if I wouldn't had made the decision, regardless of where I was, regardless of how I found out about a 12-step program or how I got into it. At the end of the day, I had to make the choice that I wanted to be sober and that I was going to do the work that I had to do to get sober. And I have. And I continue to do that every day. And thankfully, I don't have to do that alone. There was a point in time where I thought that sobriety meant that I was going to have a boring life and that I was going to only have meeting friends. But that boring life has turned into something fun and fantastic, and those meeting friends have turned into true friends. I'm going to close everything out by saying, if you don't want to put the work into this, you're truly shorting yourself, because the amount of things that you could have if you put the energy into it is amazing. Something that I tell my sponsees all the time is that you have to work for it, and something that I had to do for myself was I had to stop trying, because every time that I tried, I messed up. But I finally started doing, and from doing, I have become the person that is standing before you today. And with that, thank you for having me here. It was a pleasure.
First I slip, and then I quit. To a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul. Thank you. takes me where the promise is. I'll be the promise is on me.